You let one ant stand up to us, then they all might stand up. Those puny little ants outnumber us 100 to 1. And if they ever figure that out, there goes our way of life. It's not about food. It's about keeping those ants in line. That's why we're going back. Does anybody else want to stay? Let's ride!
This song has been killing me for like 3 days now. I cannot get enough of it. Hardline, Hot Sherry. You guys know it. You gotta know Hot Sherry. Well, in either case, I want to talk about the lyrics actually for a second, because it's so good. Hold on. Matt, you know this song?
No, I never heard it.
You're getting me hot, Sherry. Ready? Just roll down the windows.
This should be your wedding song, bro.
This should be. Lauren walks down the aisle, and we're singing "Hot Sherry." That'd be perfect. God, what a great, great song. Listen to some of these lyrics. It's been so long since the last rain, still the stars sizzle hot in the sky. And there, undressed in the shadows, stands my sweet Sherry, hiding from July. That's pretty goddamn good, okay? That's some good writing.
It's and this, deep.
And the way that the melody resolves itself is just awesome. Great melody, okay? And all night you kept me up, and all night hoping I could make you mine. Okay, so he's scheming. Okay, remember, this is the 80s. There's no internet. There's nothing like that. Okay? You're getting me hot, Sherry. Next verse, ready? I can't wait for October. And of course, last night was the last night of October, which is why I said, you know what, let's talk about the lyrics tonight. When the breeze from the lake, she's blowing cold. Well, maybe she'll need me for some shelter. See? He's scheming. But it's a great scheming. It's like, yeah, listen, you want to get together with somebody. That's your primal, carnal instincts. You want to hook up, okay? And the hottest people want to hook up with the hottest people. It's just one of those primal things. You just want to go hotter and hotter. That's it. Okay? It's just one of those things. You want to be able... That's how animals mate, too. The strongest compete in the packs, and they try to make the best genetic combination that you can. So everybody's out there hunting for each other in the 80s. This is great. I just want to think about this. And think about still being able to take somebody out on a lake. You don't have any, it probably doesn't have a lot of power. You definitely don't have any Wi-Fi. You have to really camp out, That's pretty damn good for the guy and the girl, right? Go up to the lake. You're going to get pounded, or you're going to do some pounding. Oh,
yeah,
that's
you're
fantastic.
You're going to hollow something out. And, there probably weren't all regulations back in the 80s where you needed a permit to be at that lake at that time or something like that.
Yeah, you didn't.
Because Ronald Reagan was president.
Listen,
it was fucking great.
Ronald Reagan was president, and that's why the music was so good. Okay?
That's true. Everyone got, they're doing coke.
And they're having a good time. That's the thing. In 1980s, they're rocking out, and they're having a great time. They're talking about, just rocking. They want to rock each other constantly. Listen to this one line in here. Ready? This one line. I love this. You're getting me hot, Sherry. I want to know what you've got all over me. Isn't my love strong enough? I'm ready to rock you long and rough.
Oh, damn, he's going to bust the rope.
Dude, right in the middle of the woods. They're going to be just chilling in the woods looking at the stars, and it's going to be like they're just going to be smitten, And it's just going to be like howling. They're going to be both baying at the moon.
Do you ever have sex out in the woods? Or like outside?
In the woods? Let me see. I'm trying to think. I haven't done a lot of camping in my life, so I don't think I'm remembering anything. But in Lion Park? Probably, yes.
Under the willow tree?
Yes. Right underneath by the...
So I wonder if any of those used condoms I drank were yours.
You start showing up to the Little League fields looking for used condoms to drink. What a terrible life. You talk about a degenerate. What a degenerate. Oh my God! Oh, like it gets to the point where you start going home early. You leave your friends early. You got to go home. I got to take care of something. Like, what are you going home so early every night? I just got to take care of something. All right, you leave, and it finally, a couple months goes by. Nobody knows where you're going until finally somebody just happens to go by the park and sees that your car is parked there on the drive somewhere. And then one night, you just get too curious. You go inside to see what the hell is Matt doing inside of the park every night. Oh, my God. Oh, this
half
one.
Full one.
This one was... All right. Well, that's enough. This is terrible. What's going on, Mao, in the chat room? What's going on, Rumble and Roar? Moonlit Matt. I see Mike Delabate. I saw, who else in there? Sam, what's going on, Sam? Fukuyama Sutra's in there. Who else? I don't know. But the show has begun. We're having a good time. It's November 1st. It's All Saints Day. Some good stuff. Good stuff. I like it. So let's move on to the first thing. I have a post here from a good friend. He runs a blog on Tumblr called Association of Free People, all separated by hyphens. Association of hyphen, you get it. And Think Squad had put something out yesterday that really is just Wall Street Journal that goes over the whole FBI internal feud that's going over with the Clinton probe and all that stuff, the investigation that's been reopened. And we did a lot of that yesterday and what it all led to. And I don't want to beat a dead horse, but I love what my buddy from Association of Free People wrote. And here's what he said. Here's what most likely happened. Early in Huma Abedin's relationship with both Wiener and Hillary Rodham Clinton, she had a need to reference a work email from home. She, quote, borrowed, end quote, Wiener's laptop and connected to the HRC basement closet mail server that was illegal, that should not have been around. This probably occurred 4 to 5 years ago. On subsequent connections to the HRC closet server, HRC being Hillary Rodham Clinton, closet server, she used her own device and completely forgot about the connection established from Wiener's machine. Microsoft Outlook will sync emails hosted on a remote server and will download those emails to the local device and place them within a PST file. Each time Wiener fired up his laptop, Outlook went out and obtained copies of all the mail located on HRC's closet server. Wiener was unaware of this, as was Abedin, Huma, who is now just being reduced to a staffer of mine whenever Hillary speaks, a staffer of mine. Okay, this is supposed to be her surrogate daughter. Remember that. We want to talk about where the loyalties lie when the cards are down. Flash forward to the present moment, Association of Free People says. The FBI examines Wiener's laptop for email associated with the pedophilic stalking of a 15-year-old girl and discovers and inspects the PST generated over the past 5 years. The FBI realizes almost immediately what they have. All of the HRC Abedin emails from the last 5 years are now available to them, including the 33,000 deleted emails. This computer should have been part of the investigation from the beginning. Fact that it was not is a huge problem for the FBI. It also is indicative of why Hillary Rodham Clinton should have been prosecuted in the first place. This is the exact reason the laws were broken exist. Okay? The laws that were broken exist. A pedophile had possession of classified information he was never cleared to have, by way of a server that was set up illegally and expressly to avoid public scrutiny. So for everybody out there who is really just hoping and praying for some reason that Hillary gets past this and she becomes president, if you're one of those very confusing, odd people that are hoping and praying she can push past yet another bout of adversity. Everybody's out to get her. You have to understand that if by some kind of means of legal jujitsu, she is able to wiggle out of this with the help of whatever forces she has left that are loyal to her inside the government, including Loretta Lynch and the DOJ, which is like so in the bag for Clinton and so against the American people's interest, it's unbelievable. They're playing defense. They're playing bodyguard to the Clinton Foundation. We have articles on that too, how the Justice Department has been blocking probes into the Clinton Foundation. I mean, it's unbelievable what's been happening. So let's say that all that the legal jujitsu is done and Hillary gets by squeaky clean, or she gets her pardon or something like that. Let's say that all you crazies out there get exactly what you want. Hillary Clinton for president. You do know that in this case, being vindicated in just some kind of a judicial sense does not mean that she didn't do what she did. It means that if somehow you get out of this, it's because you were able, the people that are on the legal teams and the legal, that are heading up the legal teams of the people that you're such fans of, were able to find a way to get evidence thrown out because of the way it was obtained. Not for what this has shown us. Not for all the lies along the way that have been exposed about saying there was no server. There is a server. There was no classified email on it. There was classified email on it. You didn't know. You did know. This one knew. She didn't know. She did know. The president didn't know. He did know. Everybody is lying. Smoke is everywhere. We don't have the gun yet. But if you think that vindication is something to cheer, then you are so far gone. You are so damaged that you don't even understand. You're so damaged, you have no concept whatsoever. So thank you, Association of Free People blog on Tumblr. Such a great follow. Please check him out. We also remind each other that Hinckley was released. Okay.
Should have executed him.
John Hinckley was released. So watch out.
One.
It was this year.
They should have executed him.
He was released in September.
It's not like he tried to shoot Clinton or anything.
He was released in September.
Son of a bitch. Where does he live?
Say? Yeah, it said right here. PBS.org gave it out. Let me see here. So we did Association of Free People. We talked about General Lynch. Attorney General Lynch pleads the fifth. We're going to rip through these. I have a lot of things I want to get to tonight. Washington Free Beacon, Congress. Attorney General Lynch pleads the fifth on secret Iran ransom payments. So we go and we start. We do negotiate with terrorists and we drop off huge sums of cash. Huge sums of cash, like this is some kind of a mafia transaction, okay? And you have the head capo in the Obama mob family.
Well, what do you mean? Who traded cash? What do you?
This is the Iran deal, the hostage deal, where we gave $1.7 billion in cash to Iran, and it's being blocked, and she's pleading the fifth, and trying not to self-incriminate her. She's trying to avoid self-incrimination, guys. Imagine that. And she's trying to protect friends. This is not an attorney general that's working for the American people. According to Attorney General Loretta Lynch is declining to comply with an investigation by leading members of Congress about the Obama administration's secret efforts to send Iran $1.7 billion in cash. Aside from all the sanctions it lifted, that's going to create hundreds of billions in dollars of cash every year for them. Earlier this year, prompting accusations that Lynch has, quote, pleaded the Fifth Amendment to avoid incriminating herself over these payments, according to lawmakers and communications exclusively obtained by the Washington Free Beacon. Senator Marco Rubio initially presented Lynch in October with a series of questions about how the cash payment to Iran was approved and delivered. In an October 24th response, Assistant Attorney General Peter Kadzig responded on Lynch's behalf, refusing to answer the questions and informing the lawyers that they are barred from publicly disclosing any details about the cash payment, which was bound up in a ransom deal aimed at freeing several American hostages from Iran, which means that American hostages right now are worth about $400 million because of President Obama. Because we negotiated with terrorists, the largest state sponsor of terror, to sponsor terror around the world. Because of this stupid, stupid, stupid man and all of his stupid, stupid, stupid friends in the White House.
It's fucking insane, dude.
There's a price tag.
It's crazy.
Now. You set a precedent, $400 million.
We can even actually say that. Right now, it seems like the only people that really want to do something about terrorists is fucking Russia.
Yeah. Well, you know, let me bring this up for a second, because I didn't do this yesterday. And let me see here. Actually, maybe I can get it on this one. Now, I had seen this guy. There's these tweets that were being sent around, that were being retweeted like thousands of times over. It crossed my path. And I'm looking at it here. It's this guy named... Hold on, let me get the... here we go. Now, take this for what it is. I took this and I shared it with the caption, "Everybody strap in." Because this guy, Hector Marenko, on Twitter, who was being retweeted by a couple of like WikiLeaks-friendly accounts and whatever, he put together this timeline of tweets. Okay, and this is what he put together. Now, obviously, you know, I put it out there, and I got deluged with a bunch of, "Can we have sources for this?" And I'm just like, "What? No sources." I'm like, "Think about the picture that he's painting. How plausible is it? Just start thinking about it." Okay, so Hector Marenko says this: "Soon the world will discover Hillary Rodham Clinton and Obama are at the center of the Syrian conflict, profited from the Clinton Foundation, and ignored ISIS." Right off the bat, is that not plausible? We've talked about this every night of the week for the last couple of years. Okay, listen to this. So this is going off of, this is starting on October 30th. Okay, riding on the heels of the Anthony Weiner stuff. So Hector Marenko says this. These are all in order. "Qatar and Saudis donated to the Clinton Foundation while HRC was Secretary of State. In exchange for the donations, the CIA was sent to Syria in 2011. Now that could be made, you can totally see that. Number one, we know that the Qatar and the Saudi lines are there to be drawn. We know that they make lavish donations. We know that they make million-dollar birthday gifts to William Clinton. Mm-hmm. Okay. And we also know that Hillary and her team knew that the Saudis and Qatar were sponsors and were supporting ISIS, which would also go to believe that they were giving her money to destabilize Syria in 2011, because look at who's really who is opposing Assad. ISIS. You know, we're trying to contain ISIS pretty much to Syria to keep trying to fight against Assad while trying to keep them out of Iraq. We're doing a bad job both times. So here we go. CIA was behind a staged Arab Spring uprising to attempt to topple Assad because he was blocking the Qatar-Turkey pipeline plan. And then they draw this map. ISIS formed by accident and spiraled out of control, but also provided cover for the Obama-Hillary agenda of laundering bribes for the pipeline. Now, I should present all this to Alex Plissis and see what he would say is plausible and what he would shoot down right off the bat, because he would probably shoot down a lot of this. I don't know. But just think about it. Little did Obama and Hillary realize that an auto-sync feature between Huma... Oh, I'm sorry. Before this, Hillary emails on Hillary Rodham Clinton's private server confirmed these tragic events, and Obama and HRC thought they could pardon each other after the election. Next one. Little did Hillary and Obama realize that an auto-sync feature between Huma and Wiener inadvertently saved deleted emails on Wiener's machine. That's what we just talked about to open the show. Trump, in many ways, is a sideline, a sideshow to the brazen criminality and size and scope of the Obama administration and Clinton's corruption enterprise. They also make the claim, this guy Hector Marenko says, Russia also cut a deal with Assad to allow an alternative Iran pipeline to go through Syria in exchange for favorable OPEC votes and cash. Now, if anything of this guy says is true, we're looking at how many counts of treason? I don't know. But I would like to save that for the next time Alex Plitzis comes on, because that would be great to run by him. Since, obviously, we don't have any sources to back it up except this guy Marenko. But what he's saying is not, you know, UFO conspiracy theory where, I mean, people roll their eyes unless they see the alien. You know, this is stuff that you can plausibly piece everything together. Okay, so let's see who's in the chat room. First of all, the Skype is on, everybody. Skype in at any moment you'd like. Skype is Zen Live TV. I've got to make a, quite frankly, I got to change the Skype soon since we're doing everything like that. So let's get past Attorney General Lynch pleading a fifth, Clinton Foundation scandal, a Justice Department's cover-up. We did that a little bit. Here's something that I'd like to do with you guys, a little history. Yeah, Mike Dell'Abate, who is this guy? I don't know. Rumble and Roar, it was on. The Skype was on. Okay, I understand you guys like to drink when I forget to do things or drink when I say certain things, but it was on. The Skype was on. Okay, you should have been drinking from the get-go. What's going on, Mary Hart? Just saw Marianne show up. So here's this one from the Associated Press. I thought this was a nice piece of history. Election year fatigue? Yes, yes. Blame it in part to the race of 1840. Okay. Presidential elections are a foundation of American democracy dating back to George Washington. Right, Matt?
Yep.
But presidential campaigns as we know and endure them came later. In a book published this fall, The Carnival Campaign, author Ronald G. Schaefer, who obviously stole his first name from Ronald Reagan.
Yes, and his last name from the school from Whiplash.
Yes, Schaefer School, you're right. See, this guy, he's not even his own person, so
fucking
we shouldn't...
Imposter.
What were we going to believe him for?
Fucking phony.
His first and his last name, he's just phony. Well, he reflects on the race of 1840 in this book that he wrote, supposedly. Who the fuck if he's even for real?
He didn't write it.
Well, he's got Tracy. A fake name. I'm not going to want to read his book. So he said that the race of 1840 laid the groundwork for today's songs and speeches, insults and branding, rumors about health, and left us with a catchphrase for the ages, Tippecanoe and Tyler too. You remember that? Gone forever. You know that John Tyler actually has a grandchildren still alive?
Yes.
Gone forever were the elections for which candidates stayed home and hesitated even to say they were candidates. Schaefer told the Associated Press in an interview, originally you had to kind of pretend that you weren't running for president because it was thought that the office sought the man. You know, that this is when we were a little bit more, you know, wise. Even the less educated of ourselves, we at least had principles, okay? The contenders in 1840 were President Martin Van Buren from New York, right?
Yes, yes.
Martin Van Buren, a Democrat, and Whig Party candidate William Henry Harrison, okay? Of the War of 1812 hero, and at age 67, the oldest man at the time to seek the White House. Van Buren, nicknamed the Little Michigan, was known as a skillful and influential politician and organizer. But the economy was still suffering from the Panic of 1837, and the president would find himself on the wrong side of an argument few candidates can afford to lose, which one was seen as the man of the people. Okay? Thanks to a flippant remark by a Democratic newspaper that Harrison was better off drinking hard cider in his log cabin, the Whigs effectively fashioned their well-to-do nominee as an ordinary citizen and helped make the log cabin a national symbol. Okay? See how it all started? It's good to know your history. Harrison and running mate John Tyler won easily, but Harrison's candidacy had a more enduring legacy than his presidency. He fell ill too soon after taking office and died in the spring of 1841. Okay? During a recent interview with the Associated Press, isn't that because he gave his inauguration speech in the cold and he got pneumonia?
It was raining. I think it was raining, or maybe it was cold. He didn't wear a jacket or something.
And
he was, it was a long speech.
He was a tough guy, war hero, and he refused to have the weather hold him back from giving his inauguration speech.
He died. That's why George Washington died too.
Yeah. During a recent interview with the Associated Press, Schaefer discussed the innovations of the 1840 race. On Harrison, an Ohio native, becoming the first major nominee to give a public speech. The Democrats, this is what he said about Harrison. The Democrats called him General Mum. They said that he was kept in a cage because they didn't trust him to talk for himself. And he really upset Harrison. And this really upset Harrison. Sorry. Harrison was upset they thought this about him. So one day he got an invitation to come speak at a memorial service at a fort that he had helped defend during the War of 1812, Fort Meigs, up near Toledo. So he accepted it. He did leave his silk hat at home, and he took his farmer's hat because he wasn't going to mess with the image, okay? And he stopped overnight in Columbus, Ohio, right in the middle of town, right in the middle of the state, in the capital of Ohio. The next morning, he was leaving to go on his way, and there was a crowd outside. So he started saying a few remarks, and pretty soon he had launched into a speech. And he went around the state, and it was so unusual that he drew crowds in Dayton and Cincinnati, 100,000 people, which, given the population back in those days, was quite incredible. On the public's perception of Harrison, the author Ronald Schaefer says this. He was the first heavily marketed presidential candidate, and there were all kinds of posters of him as a general and as a middle-aged man. There were even some paintings of him as a man standing against the background of an evening sun, so when people saw him in person, they were quite shocked in some cases because he was 67 years old. He was graying, a little slow, but once they saw him and he started talking, he seemed more lively and he had a good touch of showmanship too. He would ride up to the stands, sometimes on his white horse, and pop off and talk, too. He would make jokes about people saying, well, you see, I'm not walking on crutches, and I'm not the old man that you read about in the opposition newspaper. On the Harrison campaign, as a commercial phenomenon, okay, here's what he says, how the Harrison campaign was a commercial phenomenon. There were hundreds of people promoting their Tippecanoe, a famous military victory for Harrison, including Tippecanoe soap, shaving soap, okay? They had They are making all types of things now. So they had William Henry Harrison thongs. They had William Henry Harrison condoms. William Henry Harrison cigarettes.
Dildos.
That happened.
He actually invented the dildo. It's what he's most renowned for.
Yeah. Let's keep going with this a little bit. I see Mike Delabate said this is pretty interesting, so we won't stop. Here is, so they did the soap, the shaving soap. There were canes. There were pictures. There were plates with log cabins on them. There were all kinds of medicines. And companies just used the election of their own in their own advertisements. And there was free advertising for the Harrison campaign. So they said, go ahead. Fucking use it for whatever. And here's some stuff on Alexander Kaufman Ross, a jeweler from Zanesville, Ohio, helped invent the campaign song and coined Tippecanoe and Tyler too. Quote, the Whig Party had gotten every town to have their own Tippecanoe glee club of singers. So he went back and he wrote this song about the great commotion of this ball. But the final part of it, the final verse, was about Tippecanoe and Tyler too. Well, this just took off. In today's terms, it went viral. All over the country, people were singing this song about Tippecanoe and Tyler too. And which, of course, is William Henry Harrison and John Tyler. And there you go. So that's what it comes down to. Speaking of 1812, the 1812 Overture, Tchaikovsky. This is a good song. This will go on for another 15 minutes, so we'll have something to lay down, some good talks. That's it. So at 7:30, everybody, let me take a stop. We're going to listen to some classical music, okay? And while we do that, I want to thank everybody, all my bosses, okay? It's the new month, and starting tonight, I start writing some of my letters to all of the members of the 1776 Club and the 1984 Club. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, then you have to go to Patreon. Patreon.com/quitefrankly. And if you do that, you'll be able to go check out all the great free market opportunities I put out there of things that I will give you in return for your support of the show that I hope you're enjoying. A show that goes live every night. Okay, there are people that make over $5,000 a month on Patreon doing podcasts that only go live once a goddamn week. This is every goddamn night. Calm down. Everybody calm down. So let me thank everybody. Ready? In no particular order. Michael Wells. Matt Smith. Sean Collins. Of the great state of Collinsry. Nikki Solis. Andrew Dame, Christian Peppas. Andrew Dame's a good guy. He actually wrote me back. I can't wait to get him back. I'm gonna get him. Christian Peppas of the Amatory Murder, great New York rock band. Listen to them, guys. They're on YouTube. Check them out right now. Max Ancaparato from Colorado. Laura Veras. Rudy Escarcega, good man Rudy. Rudy's a good friend of mine on Twitter. Follow him on Twitter. Jackie Milam, Eric Reitz, Gadget Doc, Marianne Hart in the chat room, Kate McCallum, good friend Kate, Jenny Lee, Matt DeFabio, right across the way over there. Matt, thanks, man.
You have to thank me, bro. And you'll never have to.
This the one who started the 1984 Club. Somebody started the 1812 Club now. And Brad Meyer, the co-founder of the 1984 Club and your right-hand man. Yes. That's it. Thank you, guys. Those are my bosses. I love spending time to say all their names every night. And I'll say yours, too, goddammit. Just get to patreon.com/quitefrankly. And that's it. No, Moonlit Matt, I'm going to go check the mailbox downstairs right after I get off of this broadcast. I'm going to go check it one more time. Because I swear nothing has come in so far. And if the post office lost your letter, then I'm just going to be very upset. Because of all the things that are not in the Constitution, the post office is. It's the one thing that deserves to be there. Okay, let me see here. So we did that. John Tippecanoe and Tyler too. Election fatigue. So there you go. Get rid of that. Democrat-run cities push plans to get non-citizens to vote. What is coming over the borders right now is unbelievable. Yo, seriously, have you seen the pictures of what's coming over the borders right now, the southern border? First of all, they said over the last year, about 800,000 plus people have come. 800,000 plus people, and now they're scrambling to try. I'm telling you, this wrecking ball has not come at a sweeter time. If there's any divine providence left in how the fate of nations go and the fate of the world goes, if there's any divine providence left, then the defeat of globalism in 2016, the closing up of the borders, and the reassessing of things as a nation is the only thing that we can hope for. That's it. Holy shit. Great song. Let me see. Venezuela is telling hungry city dwellers to grow their own food. Nicolas Maduro is coining the term food sovereignty. What is it called? Yeah. This is from Washington Post. Some Venezuelan city dwellers are trying to grow their own produce to offset the country's severe shortages following socialist president Nicolas Maduro's calls for food sovereignty.
But wouldn't the government, whatever food that was grown, doesn't the government own it?
Oh, listen, if somebody
come in and split,
by all means. What they mean by food sovereignty is hopefully people can grow a couple of square yards full of cabbage in their backyard to just literally stay alive. If somebody actually became good at growing food, they would automatically have the crop stolen and they'd be put on a ration themselves. And this is what we talk about with rationing all over the place. First of all, when you talk about socialized medicine, when you talk about things like the ACA, which is an utter failure, it was designed to fail. When you talk about anything like that, what you're doing is you're asking government to ration things for you, which is why when people say things like death panels, it sounds ridiculous. But in essence, that's what they create. They create a government agency, a tribunal of people that are able to hear people's pleas as to why they need certain types of care and whether or not it's in the budget or whether or not it is plausible to give somebody of their age, their chronic condition, the resources that could be given to somebody else instead of you and your doctor making decisions for what might prolong your life. Because we are going to be dipping into the collective to try to give everybody this magical unicorn that is universal health care in a nation the size of a subcontinent with over 320 million people in it, this is when you start cutting corners. Only thing is that you don't cut corners on the programs that aren't doing anything. You don't cut corners on the taxes that you're taking and wasting on people. You cut corners on human lives, okay? The sick and the elderly, they're the corner that gets cut. That's it. This is only to keep people who are young enough to maybe go out there and take a job somewhere, which will then be sucked off of. Okay? That's it. I don't know. You can put it all. So there's more fun out of Venezuela. It's going to be a great time. Great. But how about we move away from all that? I'd like to do that. How about we do something a little more us? All right, listen to this. And everybody, if you like what you're seeing right now, press that thumbs up button on the YouTube, share it on your Twitter, share it on your Facebook, tell your friends, tell your family, tell your foes, tell anybody, tell a millennial that needs an intervention. We don't bite hard here. So this one goes out there for especially Johnny Vroom and all of the old school viewers of this show who know just how long Moonlit Matt, Rumble and Roar, Nikki, who knows just how long we've been covering this thread. This is from The Mirror. Sex robots. Yes, it's back. Sex robots with fully functional genitalia to arrive next year and will cost up to 12,000 pounds. Okay, and I've been getting to know exchange rates a little bit more these days. So 12,000 pounds is about 15,000 American dollars. So for a half a semester of college, let's get this, ready? Sex robots with fully functional genitalia. The next generation of dolls are likely to be hyper-realistic with features never seen before. Okay. Cheers.
Cheers.
They will have built-in heaters.
Oh, Jesus.
Which, so they'll have genuine body warmth and sensors that can be, they're going to get wet too. You watch. Real Doll is made by Abyss Creations, a company based in California. Of course. Founder Matt McMullen said, I want to have people actually develop an emotional attachment to not only the robot, but the actual character behind it, to develop some kind of love for this being. Oh my God, that was scary to read. Guys, is that as blatant as it has gotten so far? Holy shit. Somebody tell Johnny what he just missed. I want to have people, founder Matt McMullen says, I want to have people actually develop an emotional attachment to not only the robot, but the actual character behind it, to develop some kind of love for this being. Welcome. Oh my God. Look at this guy. Look at this guy. He looks like he goes home at night. He looks like Buffalo Bill.
You should get him to call in, bro.
He looks like he goes home at night. He looks like a robot. What's happening?
You put his picture up in that to some music that came on.
Holy shit. Okay.
It's my theme song. It's what I was listening to when I created the robot.
Where is this coming from? This is really scary.
It's what I listen to when I make love to the robot. When I cut its skin off.
All the robots I want to practice on.
Put the fucking lotion in the basket.
He probably.
Where the hell is this going?
Wait a second. I'm telling you, that dude, you put his music up because this is the guy that's going to create Terminator.
Oh, wait, here it is. Oh, shit.
Oh. That was good music.
Whew. It was good music, but you know what they were putting it behind? This. Hold on. Let me screen capture this for you. It's weird. It's almost like the mirror knows that this is creepy, but we're doing it anyway. Hold on. Look at how they're assembling all these things.
What the fuck is that?
Ready?
Is that the crash test dummy?
This is the factory, I guess. And look, and you're thinking, oh, wow, what's this? Oh, these are things that some guy in Bangkok is going to be humping in a couple of months.
That's one of the robots?
Yeah, well, this is what they start out as. Oh my God. Look at the tits on her.
Oh, she's, blue. She's dead.
Yeah, see how weird this is?
Did you see how it moved?
Well, no, they pulled it out of the mold. The cast, or whatever it was. Okay, well, this is like Halloween.
No, keep it. It's creepy. What is it?
Those are all the tits. You can get different types of tits. Look at that side boob. Yo, I'm sorry,
what
but...
What the fuck?
I'm sorry. The side boob got me semi-aroused.
Really?
Just gonna say.
The dude in the back.
What is this guy doing? That's
what
weird.
What the fuck did he just shove up his...
He just douched it. He just douched her.
Oh, well, at least, you know. Oh, finest of makeups.
I wonder when they're going to get around to the faces. Hold on. Because there's a minute left in this. You want to keep watching?
Yeah, this is weird.
Uh-oh, there comes the mouths. Succulent. Can you imagine? Like, oh my God. Somebody with a tooth fetish? Oh, she's just got great teeth. I want her to bite my dick. I can't wait. Like, people start salivating. Oh, okay, I'm going to put my dick in that. Oh, that's weird.
Hi, Mommy.
Oh!
Oh! Oh, okay, this is getting... Oh, God. It's like our friend Sarah.
Oh, my God.
What kind of eyes you want? Oh, weird. You know, some people are going to really like the packaging. They're going to say, you know, I'm going to keep her in this gurney at night. Oh, this is great package. Great quality packaging. Yeah, I'm going to fuck her right in the gurney.
Hi, Daddy.
Oh, my
God. I'm going to suck your dick. I'm going to suck you up.
My God.
That guy's going to make millions.
Well, this is definitely made. I don't know what to say. Levy, author of Love and Sex with Robots, said, I've no doubt some will find it creepy, but the arrival of sexually responsive robots will have enormous consequences.
What?
We've already seen rapid changes in human relationships thanks to the internet, mobile devices, and social media. Wherever this is going, I approve. The next major advance will enable us to use our technology to have intimate encounters with the technology itself, to fall in love with the technology, to have sex with robots, and to marry them.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Is that really a marriage? What are you talking about? You can technically marry the robot. I can marry everything that I own. It's an inanimate object. Can you imagine being at the first human robot wedding? You get an invitation to it. There's a justice of the peace there, and some mentally ill, lonely troll is there up there waiting for a robot to be rolled to him. Oh my God.
They don't walk?
I don't know. iLock345 says, thanks to feminism. Absolutely. There's going to be more and more people that are just not going to want to deal with the impending disaster or the impending rape accusation or some kind of custody battle. They're going to say, you know, fuck this. I've had no luck. What am I going to do, get married to one of these living ones? This chick never says no. This chick doesn't change her mind afterwards.
Fucking donkey puncher, and she still wants it, bro. Yeah.
Well, I told you the anti-robot violence laws will come soon after that because, you know, as long as people are talking about something ridiculous on the ground floor, as long as we are preoccupied with bathrooms and girls and boys peeing next to each other in stalls, as long as we're preoccupied with stuff like that, the planners can keep planning. Okay, of course somebody will make it an issue that we must vote on referendums about, you know, the implications of violence against robots and violence against, you know, can you rape a robot? Was the robot consenting? Of course that will be an issue that will be gladly taken on by political hacks of all types because it'll be something stupid enough to keep stupid people preoccupied so that the next time there's a vote, next time there's an election or a referendum, they'll say, robots' rights are on this election. If you don't vote, you're voting against robots' rights. I'm telling you, that's what's made. But it's done in increments, so you actually think it's relevant. So when we talk about trans this, trans that, and what the personal struggle of 0.3% of the population is going through is co-opted by a political juggernaut to try to force a gun to people's heads when they go into a voting booth and turn them against people that they actually know. This is what happens. So when you think that we're talking stupid about all this robot stuff, no. It's not here yet. Remember, the stuff that's happening right now would have been science fiction craziness to people in 1985. Science fiction craziness. Okay, so more robot sex, we got that out of the way. Here's something I'd love to bring up, because it's the only thing I have on the topic. I've been waiting for this. So more history. Now, slavery is a big thing, a big part of all of the SJW and whatever, all of the debates and the even, you know, French losers from the UN talking about how reparations need to be paid to black people in the United States, which I say, okay. Me and Anthony are third-generation Italian-American immigrants here. Okay, third generation from Italian American immigrants. Okay, you're telling me that people like everybody in this room whose family we're not all. Well, Matt, you say you have some people who are French Canadian. Still, you have nothing to do with it.
Yeah, but they didn't own slaves.
You had nothing to do with it.
And no, they didn't.
It's ridiculous.
Own, that wasn't.
Try to push that shit on me. Okay. Listen to this. This is a great, great post about slavery and the fault for people talking about slavery in the way that they are today, as far as making it about white European colonialism and only that. So this is from a blog called Stirring Wind. Really good stuff. Three paragraphs, and then we're going to end the show tonight. For me, this is Stirring Wind. For me, the most annoying examples of historical inaccuracy plus horseshoe theory are when people claim to be against racism, but they're so Western-centric they think imperialism and racism has a European only was a European only enterprise, and so they go as far around the bend that they romanticize and fetishize powerful and expansionist non-European empires that were no less imperialist than the European empires they rail against. I'm sure you guys know, because I talk about it a lot on my blog, but some of the biggest offenders were here include the mind-boggling manner in which the Empire of Japan is championed as an anti-colonial force, even though it was an undisguised colonial power that caused a destructive conflict that left 25 million people dead in Asia. Remember, if you wanted to look at the Japanese aggressions against the Chinese, they probably dwarf Hitler in some respects. Okay, World War II is a time that needs to be studied by all people. Is a span of time that needs to be studied by all people, because it was not just a global conflict. Every corner of the globe was involved. It wasn't just that. It was that there were multiple genocides going on. Multiple. You need to learn about what was driving these movements, okay? Especially the philosophies there. Or the Ottoman Empire, where people disregard its genocide of the Armenians, Assyrians, and Greeks. We cannot claim to be anti-imperialist if we're going to be okay with it or assume it is somehow less serious because the imperialists are not white by Western standards. Nor can we claim to be against Western imperialism because perpetuating Western-centric history is itself a manifestation of Western cultural imperialism. So, right there. Ignoring the capacity of non-European empires for war, racism, and even genocide, just to present a photoshopped version of them as somehow being 100% utopian, enlightened examples of anti-colonial state building amounts to actively erasing non-European history. This is not seeing non-Europeans as fully actualized and complex human beings who, like all human cultures, could produce works of art, science, and philosophy while also engaging in warfare and violence. The idea that the world was peaceful before the rise of European imperialism suggests the outlines of the world were always the same, that the modern concept of Europe as eternal, see the Roman Empire, which plainly saw northern Europeans as uncivilized barbarians, mainly your Germanic tribes, Gaul, and all that, which was more France than anything. But it suggests Europeans were perpetually at the nexus of global power when they were absolutely not. I'm going to put this in the chat room because it's one of my favorite posts out there. I'm going to put it in the chat room because I want you to read this over and over for yourself. I took the reblog from our good friend Evan Kozer of Price of Liberty. But of course, you'll see the original poster. So there's that. Good, good history.
Do white Europeans include, does that include Spain?
Hold on a second. Mike, this just froze. What happened to this? The mouse is dead. It looks like it's just the mouse. Everything else seems to be moving, but... But I guess that's it for tonight. I'm going to let Mike do that while I just say goodnight, because I can't touch anything else. Yeah, it works again. Okay. Thank you guys for hanging out tonight. It's a Tuesday night edition. I think we had a good time. Tomorrow we will be live once again at 7 o'clock. And there's nothing better than this crowd. I love getting the gang together every night. You guys kick ass. Matt, thanks for hanging out. Mike's been hanging out. Ant's been on the couch. We've just been chilling. And now it's time to have the rest of our evening. So at 9 o'clock, we'll probably go live for about 15 minutes or so. Actually, you know what? No, we're not going live. Yes, we are. Just about 15 minutes. I want to watch the Cubs game, but we may not go live. In either case, be on Facebook around 9 o'clock, and if we go live, you'll know, because it'll be Facebook. That's the best part about it. But the Cubs game might overtake that, just letting you know. All right, guys, have a great evening. See you tomorrow night, and enjoy yourselves. You kick ass. And check out patreon.com/quitefrankly.